The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
This is a WABC News Bulletin.
I've had to make statements like this too many times. Communities like this have had to endure tragedies like this too many times. Once again, innocent people were killed in part because someone who wanted to inflict harm had no trouble getting their hands on a gun. Now is the time for mourning and for healing. But let's be clear. At some point, we as a country will have to reckon with the fact that this type of mass violence does not happen in other advanced countries.
Not specifically, literally true, but true enough. Believe me, and I agree with the thrust of the president's remarks. Well, the punk reportedly confessed. He'll be arraigned later this morning. The bond will be set. There'll be no bond. The racist punk murderer who used his 21st birthday money to buy the gun he used to commit the worst hate crime of the 21st century in our country, slaughtering 9 innocent black people, 3 men, 6 women, who only treated this miserable lowlife with affection and respect when he came uninvited, but welcomed nevertheless by the parishioners at the historic Mother Emanuel AME Church here in the heart of Charleston, South Carolina, where I am reporting to you this morning. Noam, good morning.
Good morning.
You know you work here. You know the Post and Courier. It's a fine Pulitzer Prize-winning local newspaper. They we have now access to Snapchat and other video came off of social media, so we know almost exactly what happened in that church. I want to read, if I can. We have many, many great guests scheduled for you, and I want to take your calls. I want to tell you both why this guy failed in his desire to start a race war and whether New York should worry about copycats like this. I know Noam has been reporting increased police presence at places like in New York, the historic Abyssinian Baptist Church. But here, let me read to you from the Post and Courier, if I may. The tragedy unfolded on a hot, steamy night after about a dozen clergy and church members gathered for a regular Bible study and prayer service. They met in the basement, a ground-level floor beneath the sanctuary that housed the pastor's office and other rooms. They studied Mark 4, 16-20, which reads like this. Others, like seed sown on rocky places, hear the word and at once receive it with joy. Then the reporter goes on. A young white man, not part of the congregation, came in around 8:15 p.m. and sat down quietly. He stayed for 40 to 50 minutes as the session continued. Then the reporter goes back to Mark 4. But since they have no roof, they last only a short time. When trouble or persecution comes because of the word, they quickly fall away. And then the reporter back to the narrative of what happened from the tape. Suddenly, the young man rose, uttered remarks that betrayed his contempt for blacks, and opened fire with a gun. You know what he said by now, ladies and gentlemen. You rape our women, you blacks. You want to take control. Continuing the story. In all, 6 women and 3 men died after gunfire sprayed through Emanuel's basement. Among the dead were a state senator who served as the church's primary pastor, a beloved county librarian, a dedicated girls' track and field coach, and a young college graduate. The victims ranged in age from 26 to 87. Ladies and gentlemen, I have to tell you, this is one of the most horrific crimes I've ever covered, certainly in our country. This slaughter of these people, and what makes it so infuriating, what absolutely makes it so hard to bear, is that these victims were the best of people, the kind of people that you just love, the people that welcome, the people that faith-based, they just want to do the right thing. It's the state senator, the coach, the librarian, the college grad with her whole life in front of her. And they're killed by this young hate monger, this racist Judas. That's what I call him, a racist Judas. Like Judas, he sat among the faithful all the time, harboring this racist motivation, knowing that he wanted to commit this terrible crime because he wanted to be like Charles Manson. He thought he could provoke a race war by committing an atrocity so terrible that it would ignite widespread violence. Imagine. That's what he wanted to do. It is so sad. And what is remarkable, and this is going to be a continuing theme this morning, what is remarkable is that how different Charleston, South Carolina, this city with a checkered racial history, how this city, Charleston, after this crime, seven innocent people murdered, came together in a way that, when compared to Baltimore, is extraordinary. When compared to anything, is extraordinary. But having come from Baltimore and seeing how Baltimore reacted, it was as if the cover. I spoke with both former governor, now congressman actually representing the district in which the Mother Emanuel AME Church exists, Mark Sanford, and I spoke with Senator Lindsey Graham, the longtime South Carolina senator now running for president, and Senator Graham said this was like in Baltimore, they opened this can and it was filled with worms, all these unresolved issues. Here, people in Charleston understand that despite the past, despite the weight of history, this was the act of one maniac, one racist maniac, one hate monger who adrift in the world had nothing going on. So what do you do when you have nothing going on? You hate on black people. You get a gun and you slaughter black people. That's what you do. That's what you. And did you see him? Did you see him when they busted him up in Shelby, North Carolina, and they led him out wearing a bulletproof vest, as they customarily do, and he came out and he saw the crowds with his mop top haircut. He smiled. He smiled, this savage who ended nine lives, all of whom were a million times better than him. And to do that, it was just unbelievably hurtful. On the line now, Ronnie Sabb, one of the state senators from the area. Senator, we really appreciate your coming on. Tell me how you're feeling today. Senator, can you hear me?
Oh, yes. Hello.
Hi. Please tell me, welcome to the program. Tell our listeners how you personally are reacting right now.
Well, you know, Geraldo, it's still almost in a moment of disbelief continually. I mean, we were at one place, and then 24 hours later, we were in a totally almost different world. And so I think as a community, we still find ourselves reeling. But there has been strength garnered as a result of it. And so on the one hand, we find ourselves in suffering and in mourning. On the other hand, we were experiencing the kind of joy that we've witnessed around America. When tragedies happen, there's just something about the American spirit that unites us such that we support each other, and we get through it as a community. And so as a senator from the state of South Carolina, I simply got to tell you, I'm proud of our people.
Senator, let me ask you this, though. I get that totally, and I am so impressed. By the way, you know, I was at the church last night and again this morning, how mourners are coming up, white and black, holding hands. There is no distinction racially between the mourners. People feel united in their grief. But
That's correct.
I did speak with one young black man who, while he totally expressed that sentiment, that we're all in this together, also told me that he was fearful that in the climate where there is so much violence within the black community and now with predators, with all the problems with cops and all the rest of it, and now with a maniac like this, that he didn't feel safe. I mean, do you have that among your constituents, Senator?
Fear is real. But we cannot allow fear to conquer and take over our spirit. If we do that, we allow the minority out there who are filled with hate, who continues to want to do us harm, to control our lives. And once we allow that to happen, we are no longer a free people. And so while that fear is real, we cannot allow that to be the overriding emotion that controls what we do and how we do it. And so I would say to that young man, it is okay to be fearful, but it's not okay to allow that fear to control him and who he is. And whether or not he feels the freedom that he ought feel living in a country like America. Now, don't get me wrong. As our sisters and brothers keepers, and I believe we are to an extent, we've got duties, we've got obligations. And I mentioned to someone last night that I don't think that we should sit idle when we are in conversations and persons are spewing out hate, racism, and all of those kinds of things. I think if we're passive in those conversations, then in essence we are promoting that kind of a thought process in our society. And I think in order for us to advance the needle forward, we've got to confront that kind of thing anytime we come into contact with it.
I absolutely agree. State Senator Ronnie Saab, I really appreciate that. And the kid's friends should have busted him. His parents certainly, in giving him money to go buy a gun, just bizarre and so desperately tragic. Senator, thank you very much for coming on our program this morning.
Thank you,
Rob,
for what you're doing. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
I'll get a call on here before we go back to our local guest here in Charleston, South Carolina. In Brooklyn, Jeff's on the line. Thanks for calling 866-ARELLA. What's on your mind, Jeff?
Hey, good morning, Rob. Thanks for having me on. I just had a comment, quick opinion, and I woke up this morning and I heard the comment you said about the picture of him, you know, Dylann Roof being walked out in the bulletproof vest with him smiling. I woke this morning and said to myself, you know, this world is truly going mad. It just makes no sense. And I started speculating to myself, you know, what would have happened if it was a black man walking into a church full of white people and he did the same thing? Do you believe, in your opinion, that he would be able to walk out of that church alive?
Well, I think he'd probably walk out of the church alive and get away, but whether he would be smirking on his perp walk, I don't know the answer to that. But I think that everybody, as you said that, Jeff, it's very interesting. I'm sure that everybody listening did that mental exercise just as you were saying that. If this was a reverse, if this was a black kid going into a Baptist church, a white Baptist church, how would this community be reacting now? I think it would be reacting. I think that obviously the shock and outrage would obviously be there. But whether, you know, people would be kind of holding hands and saying we're all in this together, I'm just not so sure of that. Peter McCoy, state representative. I met him on the street yesterday, one of the many concerned elected officials here in Charleston who are have been remarkable in terms of their demonstration of support and concern for their community. State Rep. McCoy, thank you for coming on. So tell me what you're thinking. What's foremost? Can you answer that question the caller just asked? What are you thinking?
Well, Geraldo, I just want to thank you for having me on the show. It's been a tough few days for Charleston, but what I can tell you is from my observations and the phone calls I've received and what I've just seen on the street alone is that this city is coming together. It doesn't matter, young, old, black, white. This is a city of love. This is a city of hope. This is a city of hospitality. And this will only make us stronger. And you've probably seen this in your career as well, but it's how you react to adversity which really builds fortitude. And I think that this city will only be stronger after what's happened here this past couple of days.
Let me ask you this, State Representative Peter McCoy. How why did Charleston respond so differently than Baltimore?
You know, I really don't know the exact answer to that. But you know, this is a city, Geraldo, that's won numerous awards nationwide for the past few years in terms of hospitality and tourism. Folks want to come here. Folks want to be here. Folks want to be a part of the history. They want to learn about the city. They want to learn about the people. This is a city that's come a long way with relations. And, you know, the people that I've talked to on the street, the one sentiment has been echoed throughout has been, you know, this is one love, one city. We're going to get through this. We're going to stand strong together.
And in terms of race relations going forward, I interviewed, and I mentioned this earlier, a young black man last night. He said, you know something, I want to hold hands. I want us to be united, and yet I'm fearful that something terrible will happen to me.
The only thing I can say to that, and again, is that we have to stand united. Everybody in this city has to stand united behind what's happened. We've lost 9 members that were all contributing members to this society. They were all honorable people. And what's even worse about this scenario is that they were gathering in faith. They were gathering to pray.
Disgusting.
They were gathering to study the Bible.
Outrageous, outrageous.
Absolutely.
I was pleased
outrageous.
To meet you on the street, Peter, and I thank you for coming on. State Representative Peter McCoy.
Thank you, Geraldo. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Good luck. Good luck to your community. Noam, can you answer that question that the caller from Brooklyn posed, the scenario, what if it were a black shooter in a white church?
How would Charleston respond? Or
how would America respond?
I think in a similar way. You know, I would hope it would be in a similar way. It's a good question.
It's a good question, and it really is one of those that everybody, I'm sure, will be answering it differently. There's also a lot of history here in terms of the race. You know, that very church there was the scene of an uprising, a slave uprising in the early 19th century. It's a lot of history here.
At the scene of the horrible crime where 9 innocent people were slaughtered by a racist sociopath, we have the Mother Emanuel AME Church, and this is the former governor of South Carolina, currently the congressman for this district, Mark Sanford. Good to see you. I am so sorry for the tragedy, the horrible crime, the savage crime committed in your district. Why are people responding in the way they are with love and racial brotherhood rather than the animus we saw in Baltimore?
I can't answer that, but it's remarkable to look across the sea of faces that you see right now, black and white, young and old, people coming together, dropping off flowers, as you see here behind us. It's moving. It's telling in terms of this community that has seen a lot over the years. And listen to a great speech, not speech, but sermon a few moments ago at a reconciliation service a couple blocks from here. And the preacher, Reverend Davis, talked about the book of Job and how we could learn things through hardship in life. This community has seen a lot of hardship over the years, and maybe that's part of why they come together as they do now.
Is the community forever scarred by this? It does join a melancholy history from the slave revolt to the start of the Civil War to the slave markets and everything else. Is this part of that grim history, or is this one lone sociopath more like a member of the KKK?
One lone sociopath. I mean, anybody who gets in their car, drives 100 miles to go to a very historic church in the state and in this community, and goes to a Bible study and then basically shoots everybody inside is indeed a sociopath. So this is an outlier, in no way representative of this state or this community.
So how does this community heal from here? What will you advise your constituents now?
I think that what everybody can do is what they can do. And it's one neighbor to a neighbor. It's one person across the street. It's somebody you work with. That's the essence of race relations. And if you begin in your sphere of influence and saying, how can I make a difference, not across the world or across the country, but in my neighborhood or on my street or with my coworker, that's where change really occurs.
Well said. But can you fathom the hatred that motivated this terrible act?
I can't. I mean, this kind of malice is incomprehensible. That's why it's gathered the media attention that it has. That's why it's gathered the array of flowers that'll keep growing. That's why the worshipers, if you will, are here gathered in the street as they are. It is horrendously, impossibly complicated to even imagine, much less comprehend.
And if you were his dad today, who gave him a .45 caliber on his 21st birthday?
I mean, you're asking me to comprehend something that I can't, and therefore I can't. I can't get inside his mind. I can't get inside of his day. All you can do is what you can do, which is to say, how can I be a better person in this day? How can I reach across to somebody that's in my neighborhood, in my church, in my place of business? How can I make a difference there? And that's all I can do.
Former Governor Mark Sanford, now Congressman representing the district, and it turns out the dad did not give him the gun. The dad gave him the money, and he went out and went to the gun store and got the gun. And he got the gun after having two arrests on drug-related charges, just a kind of a sick situation. You know, we've been guided here. Charlie James is a longtime fixture at WTMA, the station that is hosting us today, and he's been gracious enough to come on the program yesterday when the news was just breaking, and he's here right now. Charlie, turns out, first of all, welcome to back to New York.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
You know, he's been charged with 9 counts of murder.
Right.
He'll be, arraigned at the bond hearing at 2 o'clock. Where does Charleston go from here?
We keep going. You heard Congressman Sanford and during your interview, and you were talking about the history of Charleston and the scars that we have. If you drive through the downtown, the streets of Charleston, and see the historic homes that we have, you'll notice these bolts and washers in the homes. Those homes, those were put in there after the great earthquake to hold those homes together. They trussed up those homes. We still have scars from Katrina when she came in and did, I'm sorry, from Hugo.
Hugo, yep.
When Hugo came through and virtually destroyed all of Charleston, we still have those scars. Scars don't mean anything. Scars are just a symbol of your history and where you've been. They are not an indicator of your future. They're not an indicator of your strength. They're just an indicator that you have gone through something horrible and you survived it. And we're going to survive it.
And what about race relations here?
They are, at this point, they're tense, but they're peaceful. We saw that going on after the Walter Scott shooting several weeks ago. Everybody was expecting Charleston to blow up, to be another Baltimore, to be another Ferguson. We're different here. We are a family. I had a caller on this morning, and we were talking about how our last name is Charleston. Everyone that lives here, our last name is Charleston, and we're a family. And we've got the crazy uncles out there, and we've got the dysfunction that a lot of families have. But we are, at the end of the day, a big family community. And that's the way we treat each other. And we have problems. We have issues. But we try to address those as peacefully as possible.
A young black man, and I keep coming back to this because I can't shake this image. Last night,
mm-hmm.
everybody getting together, all the mourners, black and white together. And I was right. tremendously impressed by that. I think you're absolutely spot on in how you describe how both communities, both the races are coming together in mourning over this thing. But he said to me, you know, I want to be arm in arm with everyone, mm-hmm. but I'm afraid. Yeah. I'm afraid now with all the violence and, you know, because of Ferguson, because
sure.
of all the Staten Island in my town and all the rest. I personally, young black man, mm-hmm. am afraid. You know, what do you say to him?
Don't be. Lock arms with your brother. Lock arms with your neighbor. Let's be the community that we are day in and day out. We are we work together. We strive together. We struggle together. In a lot of circumstances, this shouldn't divide us. This should bring us together.
Now, here's another hypothetical, and maybe mm-hmm. I got to get to my callers.
Sure.
But Jeff from Brooklyn saying, "What if this were a different situation? What if the shooter Roof was a black guy
mm-hmm.
and he went into a white Baptist church and killed 9 innocent white parishioners? How would Charleston be responding?"
We would be in the same amount of shock as we are now. I don't know. That's hard to say to speak on what ifs, but I would like to think that this community would come together just as peacefully as we are now.
God, I hope so.
Yeah.
I would hope so. But it is the fact that you and I, veteran broadcasters, mm-hmm. struggle over that image.
Sure.
I think is evidence of how complex race relations are in this country.
It is. It's a difficult thing to deal with because no one, no group knows the other's experience. I cannot sit here and claim to know the struggle and the experience and the day-to-day things that a black man goes through, nor can he know what I go through. We just have to assume the best of each other. We have to assume that everybody is out there trying to do the best they can for their family, for their community, and for their country, and just hope that we can find some sort of common ground that can bring us together. Celebrate our differences, but embrace our similarities.
Charlie James, well said, man. I really, it's a pleasure, first of all, being in your house here at WTMA. I want to give John Quincy a shout out.
Oh, definitely.
You're our station manager for hosting us. It really is a top flight pro organization. Noam Layden used to work here. We're going to talk to Noam about his history here. But Charlie, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, so much going on today. At 2 o'clock, there's going to be a press conference. The mayor here is holding a press conference in about 13 minutes. We'll monitor that and see what news is made. You have the formal charges against the murderous punk, the racist punk, I call him, like I said, a racist Judas. Like Judas, he sat with the faithful and pretended. He pretended that, he was interested in the Bible studies, interested in the passages being recited, when the whole time, just imagine the whole time, looking those people right in the eye from 2 feet away, knowing that he was going to murder them, murder those innocent, fine, upstanding people. It's just a shattering crime. It is 48 minutes after 10 o'clock. We'll be right back.
Where New York comes to talk.
Okay, welcome back. It is 5 minutes before 11 o'clock. I'll get to more of your calls in the next segment, but in the meantime, let me go squeeze in Frankie here from Brooklyn. What's up, Frankie? Thanks for calling 866 Geraldo.
Geraldo, good morning. And on behalf of all New Yorkers, I want to extend my deepest condolences to the people of Charleston. It's an atrocity. My question is this, that why we are pursuing answers that we can't answer. I mean, this has nothing to do with what culture did, what black, white, black. It takes us to know, it only incites people to think of other things that might become a little obnoxious, for lack of a better word. So why aren't we concentrating on who and what, mental illness? Isn't this the right road to take? It's like an ounce of prevention is worth a pound.
Well, let me ask you this, Frankie. Let me ask you this. Were all of those members of the KKK that perpetrated all that racist violence over the years, were they all mentally ill, or was it something else going on?
Absolutely, in my opinion. These people, something affected their lives. Something influenced them at an early age. And it might have been...
What about history, tradition? You know, feeling that the world was becoming different than the world they wanted, so they were willing to impose violence, inflict terrible violence to keep things as they were.
Yeah, but it's still...
I don't know if that's mental illness. Maybe sociopathic behavior. All right, Frankie, thanks. We'll be back. Common man like me. Good morning, New York. I'm in Charleston, South Carolina. This town, obviously deeply shaken by the slaughter of 9 innocent women and men inside a historic church by a young hate monger, a racist Judas, a delusional wannabe Charles Manson, a punk who thought he could provoke a race war by committing an atrocity, a race atrocity so terrible that it would ignite widespread violence. He failed because the community came together, unlike Baltimore, which tore itself apart. But there's real worry, or there is some worry, I should say, that New York or other places might experience, God forbid, copycats. Noam, what exactly is the NYPD doing about that prospect?
You know, they say there's no threats against, any of the African-American churches that they know of. But they want to ease some fears. And just in case there's copycats, we had a copycat in Richmond, Virginia this morning, or it was actually last night. Someone showed up, the door of this Richmond, Virginia church, started pounding on the front door. African-American church, white guy on the outside screaming all kinds of racial slurs. Thankfully, there was a police officer on duty just for the reason of what took place in Charleston, and they arrested him. So you just never know. And so
there was a beat cop there.
There was a beat cop who was sitting inside, absolutely. And so that's what's going to happen here. You know, they never give us exact details because, of course, they don't want to give the information out. But they want it to be known they are watching those churches, more closely today.
Our friend Laura from Harlem is on the line. Hi, thank you so much for calling, Laura. What are you thinking about today?
Well, two things, actually. I'll try to be as brief as possible. Geraldo, in order for us to really resolve or attempt to resolve the issues that's going on, we have to have honest dialogue. And one of the things is that, you know, it was so easy for people like Mark Levin to reach to the president when these cops were, you know, their lives were taken and blame him on down. Let's get to the point of what's going on. This young man is 21 years old. The rhetoric that he used in terms of rape, that's old rhetoric, Geraldo.
I know.
When he went on to say, take back our country, I've heard that from the time President Obama has been in office, and this has come from people with hate. We want our country back. We have to take back our country. The connotations there, the subliminal messages that's there. This 20-year, when he's listening to this, no one has discussed that. So if we don't stop with this dialogue, and it goes for the liberals too, because a lot of them, they do the same with blacks, and I'm constantly on that, and I speak on it the same way. No one wants to hear me one way or the other, but I'm a straight shooter. And this is what, and if we don't get into honest dialogue, you know, and we don't kill this cancer, it's going to occur again.
Let me ask you my question. This troubling question that I don't think we really have gotten our arms around. It's a what if question. I grant you, I hate asking hypotheticals, but what if the shooter here was black in South Carolina, remember? The shooter's black and nine white innocent parishioners, including a state senator and some very popular, wonderful people, are dead.
Well, I hate to say this, and I don't know how it may sound, but South Carolina, with their Confederate flag still flying around, you answer that one, Hillrom.
I agree with you. I hate to say it, but it is.
I have a lot of members from South Carolina, and all that beauty they're talking about, my ex is from South Carolina, and he has four guns. He lives in Florida now with four guns.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, with four guns, that's a nightmare of a difference. But he's illegal. He's straight by the book. But this is the fear coming from
South
Carolina.
What does he need
Carolina?
Four guns for? I
know, but he's one of those. He believes in the Second Amendment.
Okay.
He's one of those. Thanks, Geraldo.
All right, thank you, Laura. You're great. Thank you very much. David in New Jersey, what are you thinking about, David?
Geraldo, thanks for taking my call. I'll try to be brief, too. I believe the suits who gutted our mental health system and who created and hide behind this shill called behavioral health to limit visits and save money and have pumped our system full of non-MDs and non-PhDs and vendor mental health agencies to give us care are responsible too. And
I got you, David. I've got an important guest. Not that you aren't important. I appreciate your call, but I've got to run. I appreciate that. And the failures of the modern mental health system. That's a topic for perhaps another day. But we're joined now by a black community leader who wants to run for mayor of Charleston, South Carolina. He's William Gregory, and he's on the line right now. Mr. Gregory, how are you doing?
As best as we can be it.
Our condolences, obviously, from New York and around the country. This town has suffered grievously. How do you go forward from here?
With prayer. And what we have to do now is bury our dead and go through the healing process. We've got to pray, we've got to plan, and we've got to make sure that we put policy in place that this doesn't happen again at Mother Emanuel.
Now, you're with the mayor now, the current mayor. He's holding the press conference. What do you think of how the city leaders have responded?
I think unbelievably, being one of the city leaders and a councilman and a trustee for the church, I think we are responding appropriately. We're one Charleston, and all this will do is bring us together and make us stronger as a city.
Did you know any of the victims?
Every single one. I'm a member of Mother Emanuel. I'm on the trustee board. I work personally with each one of the victims. So you can imagine the hold that this has placed in my heart.
You know, when I talk about it and I think about it, I want to cry. I do. The blood of those poor people sanctifying that historic place. I wonder, can you go back there? Can you worship there? What will you do?
I will go back there. I will worship there. And I will make sure that Mother Emanuel continues to be the bloodline in the African-American community and across this country and across this world. Our church, as you know, has been a pioneer in civil rights, and we are going to continue to make sure that our city continues to be one Charleston.
Well, I wish you well with your career as a public official and your aspirations, and I certainly even much more fervently wish you healing in this stricken community, and I thank you for coming on, William Gregory.
Okay, and thank you very much for the opportunity. Just pray for us.
You've got it. You've got it. You are in my prayers. Absolutely.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, man, Noam, I'm telling you. You're going to pass that building now. For decades, that Mother Emanuel Church has stood in that place. And that's where the slave uprising of 1822 happened. That's where they closed the black church down. The slave holders and the local government closed down that black church in the pre-Civil War days. The black congregants revolted. Someone tipped off the authorities that there was a slave revolt that was planning in that building. They executed, I think it was 37 slaves who were planning revolt against their oppression and their bondage. And for decades, people passed Mother Emanuel and remembered that and remembered that Martin Luther King came there to preach, that Booker T. Washington came there to talk to the congregants and to preach. Coretta Scott King was there to protest the issues of the civil rights movement and the anti-war movement. Now that building that Noam, you know so well, having lived here, will be forever associated with the fact that in the basement, as they read from the scriptures, seated next to this racist punk monster murderer, that 9 were slaughtered there. And it wasn't a shot for each of them. He emptied that .45, he popped that clip, popped another one in, shot more, popped that clip, put another one in. They think that there should be, they think that he reloaded five times in smearing that sanctuary with the blood of these innocents. It's just something that was just heartbreaking. And the fact that he had all of these racist ideas and these other, you know, harbored this hatred as he armed himself. Should we have known? How do you know? How do you know if it's in your family? How do you know? What do?
You don't. And then and you know how it is when you see somebody acting strange, even a family member. Sometimes you're at a loss of what to do. I mean, maybe the family member knew he was a little bit strange, but it didn't even fathom the idea that he might pull off or even be thinking of doing something like that. So how do you stop somebody like that?
You know, they say if you see something, say something about a gym bag that somebody leaves, and then what the caller said, what are you going to do? You're not going to have them arrested. So then that means the mental health system. And look at the mental health system as it exists today. I mean, it's a shadow of its former self. The institutions were emptied out, and there was never an alternative created. But down here, you have the context of this history. The one thing you can't I don't want this to get off into a mental illness, because everybody that does something like this is obviously crazy. But there's a special sociopathic craziness associated with racism, the racism of the South, the Knight Riders, the KKK, the skinheads. They found all these racist videos in this kid's room, all of these skinhead videos in this kid's room. He wore the patches from apartheid South Africa and Rhodesia, the former white-ruled nation of Rhodesia, which now is Zimbabwe. Welcome back. 26 minutes after 11 o'clock. My next guest has done a little familiar face on Fox News and other stations. Jonathan Gilliam's been a cop, an FBI special agent, a Navy SEAL, an air marshal. Now he's currently CEO of the United States Continued Service. Jonathan, welcome on board. How do you stop something like this?
You know, Geraldo, I'm looking at some of these news reports about this guy's friends that saw these weird behaviors and his racial remarks. And here's the problem that we have in this country, and you know this, is that none of that's illegal. His weird behavior and his odd remarks are not illegal. And even if they went to the police and said, you know, these things, he's saying weird stuff, the police could question him. But how you stop this is the real hard part. You know, I think what it comes down to, Geraldo, is unfortunately awareness. And I preach awareness all the time. Now I'm talking about how to stop the actual attack. I have my own opinions on how we target racism and mental illness, but awareness of your surroundings and what's normal and what's not, and being ready to react. I mean, unfortunately, in this day and age, you have to be ready to react no matter where. And the best reaction is action. So what do I mean by that? If you're aware and you have a plan, if something happens, I'm going to react. And this church in particular had been targeted over the hundreds of years, 100 years that it was around. They should always be aware that there's hate in the world, and this is a potential target. And
I totally agree with you. I want to say this, and I've said this, ladies and gentlemen, before. The worst thing you can do is be a lamb being led to the slaughter, in my opinion. You fight back. Fight back. Don't lie there. Don't expect, please don't shoot me, because he's going to shoot you. I mean, it's just, they come in your house, you got to fight them. They tell you not to make a 911 call, make the 911 call. Just don't give in, because once you do, it gets worse. It just escalates just terribly. But let me ask you another question, Jonathan. What about do you think that this dysfunctional, disgruntled, kind of rootless kid, do you think that he did all this on his own, that he picked this target, that he drove, 100 miles across the state, that he went into the prayer service, planned, going into the plan, that all this whole scheme was just done just by himself? What are the odds on that? Or did he have some guidance from some grown-up racist with more experience?
Geraldo, I think it comes down to this. A good investigator will never tell you, no, there's no possibility that he had help, or yes, he absolutely did. I think it's, he could have, or maybe he did it on his own. If somebody is this mentally deranged and this evil on the inside, where they have no conscience, they can get fixated on something and come up with an elaborate plan.
He is competent to do that. That is, as dysfunctional as his life may have been, you think he could have pulled this off?
I think psychopaths have an ability to target take down targets far beyond the capacity that they have to actually mingle in society. They have a breakdown in one area of their life, but they're super focused in another. And that's the problem with these types of mentally deranged.
That's a good point. That's an excellent point.
Now, he could have had help. And I'll tell you what I think the help that he had was just the fact that this hate is all over the internet. Just like with somebody who's interested in learning more about Islam, they can go on there and they can get skewed to the right because there's all kinds of hate from the fundamental Islamic Mohammedism followers online, and they can get skewed that way. This kid could have, been introduced because of lack of parenting or bad culture that he lived in or mental illness, and he got online. and found these things and then skewed that way. Or the third possibility is he actually, you know, was a part of some type of a white supremacy group, and he's crazy enough to believe what they were saying and acted on it.
Well, I think that he, or two of things, he was a member of a group and he still was, focused enough to pull it off. Jonathan Gilliam, I appreciate you coming on. Thank you for sharing your expertise. You really know what you're talking about, and I appreciate you. I appreciate you taking the time.
Anytime, Geraldo.
All right, buddy. Our old boss and friend, Reverend Jonathan Mason, has left WABC for Greener Pastures. Actually, he's running his charity, taking care of or guiding or providing a future for young minority men. We appreciate and applaud his efforts. He runs a national fraternity. Jonathan, what's the name of it again?
Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity Incorporated.
And it is a traditionally, historically black organization. Did you know or were any of these victims members of your group?
Yes, Geraldo. You know, we released a statement first thing yesterday about this very unfortunate tragedy, only to find out 2 hours later that Reverend Daniel L. Simmons, Sr. Has been a member of our organization since 1966. As a matter of fact, just last week, Reverend Simmons sent in a payment for his 2016 assessments. He's been a loyal and faithful member of our organization. We've certainly met him as we've traveled to the conferences in that area, and it's certainly a loss for our membership. And we are actually having a call at 12 o'clock to talk about how we're going to present our organization at his homegoing services. So absolutely, this is personal. It is a very sad day for our organization.
And your comments, Reverend Mason, about how Reverend Simmons died.
Well, you know what? It's interesting, Geraldo. On Wednesdays, in the black church, the tradition is on Wednesdays that we have prayer meeting. They're calling it Bible study, but really what we call it in the black church is prayer meeting. And I was actually teaching prayer meeting in Philadelphia at the very same time as this was going on. It goes on in churches all across this country. And we welcome visitors into our churches, those that we don't know, because the whole great commission of the church is to win souls for Christ. So I'm certain Pastor Pinckney was happy to see a visitor, only to find that when they went down in prayer to close out the service, that this young man had other intentions, and it is an unfortunate, sad occurrence. But we join with all of those that are faithful and those that understand that God works in mysterious ways in lifting up the families in prayer as they go through their hour of bereavement.
You know, as you say that, Jonathan, and I know you well, and you know, I have a tremendous regard for you. I hear what you're saying about faith and embracing the goodness in people, and I recall how many young Jews after World War II said, why should I embrace God when he allowed the Holocaust to happen? Why should I embrace Christ when before his altar, this demon became the incarnation of evil and killed these nine people who were nothing but good, Reverend Mason?
You know, those of us that are of the Christian belief understand that God sent Jesus, his only begotten Son, to die as a ransom for our sins. And the one thing that we know about Jesus, and we talk about it during the time of Lent, the time of Easter, is that he suffered mightily. And one of the things Paul said, one of the great apostles of Christ, he said in Romans, the 5th chapter, the 3rd verse, that we should rejoice, too, when we run into problems and trials, for we know that they help us develop endurance. And basically what Paul was saying is that just as Christ suffered, we're going to suffer. Just because we claim Christianity, just because we believe in God, doesn't mean that there aren't going to be difficult pathways that we must follow. And the world, in Revelation, it tells us that the world is going to go through a lot of torment. This is torment, Geraldo. And while it hurts, while we are grieving, while we understand that no one should die like this, We also understand that there is a remedy, and the remedy is through Christ. And this world has to come back to the Lord. I believe that fully within my every being and every fiber of my life, and that's what we're dedicating our lives to, is sharing with the world that there is a way out, and the way out is through our belief and our faith in God.
Reverend Jonathan Mason, preaching it like it is. I appreciate you. You know I do. And I thank you very much for coming on. And our condolences for the loss of the Reverend Simmons is among the others.
Thank you, Geraldo. Thank you
Amen.
So much.
Amen. All right. I want to, if it's possible, given the grim story, lighten it up a little bit. You know, they used to have a show when I was watching black and white TV, Queen for a Day. And so the person, the designated queen for a day, would be facing the audience when somebody would walk in behind them or they'd hear a voice. So, Noam Layden, you're my queen for a day. Here's the voice.
Hello, Noam. It's been a long time since we've spoken.
I recognize that voice.
And what do you think of Noam Layden?
I like Noam Layden. He's one of my favorite people in radio in all of the world. I know you like to give him a bit of a hard time, though, which I don't really appreciate, Geraldo.
You know, when I was in Charleston, South Carolina, and the voice you're hearing is J.D. Padusa, but now he goes by Jay Shaddix, and he has this great show on Nash FM in Charleston. When I was there, they made me change my name because my name, Noam Layden, was too New York.
Mm-hmm. So you think?
Yeah.
I had nothing to do with it.
Which might be, yeah, no, Jay had nothing to do. I love Jay. Jay's
was,
the greatest
was
guy.
Was it like R.T. Jones?
No, my name, so the best part was my name was, I forgot. Oh, it was Jeff Lewis. They gave me the name Jeff Lewis. So they told me
when you forget your own name.
Yeah, so they gave it. I did. I had to write it down in front of me the first week I was on the air because I couldn't remember. But the best thing about it was, I think it was because they didn't like it. It was Jewish sounding. I'm guessing. I don't know for a fact. So, but the best thing about it is I went to the phones on my very first day, and the very first phone call I took was this woman, and she came on. She had this southern accent. She said, well, I'd like to thank WSC so much for finally putting a Jewish person on the air. And I was like, yeah.
I didn't fool anybody with that name.
So if you ask anybody who Noam Layden is down there, they won't know who the heck that is. But if you say Jeff Lewis.
So, Jay Shattuck, do you have any stories about Noam when he was down here?
Oh, I have lots of stories.
Did you hang out? Did you go drinking? What did you do?
We didn't go drinking too much, but we definitely hung out. He was one of the first people to sort of introduce me to working in radio. So, I mean, like you said, I was on the air with the most ridiculous name ever as J.D. Padusa. Came in and produced the morning show, and then it sort of ended up just being Noam and I played his sidekick for a while.
Padusa.
J.D. Padusa.
Well, we did get to a great restaurant here.
What'd you get to?
What was it?
Hall's Chop House.
Hall's Chop House.
Yeah,
but it was amazing how everybody come up to me, they're dressed to the nines. I mean, all these beautiful ladies and gentlemen, mm-hmm. all dressed up, and they come in and then they come over to me and kind of hug me and say, I'm sorry for what happened, or welcome to Charleston. I'm sorry it's under these circumstances. Yeah. It was the Southern hospitality. It was so curious. To see it. But I want to ask you, and Noam, I'm going to force you to answer this question.
Sure.
Too. Here's the question. I'm going to give you the commercial break to ponder the answer. And I've been posing this hypothetical all day.
Okay.
Change what happened, this one detail. Make the shooter black mm-hmm. and the nine victims white. How does Charleston, how does America respond? Don't answer now. We'll hear from Noam and Jay and me after this.
WABCradio.com.
5 minutes to high noon. It wasn't Queen for a Day. It was This Is Your Life. The original host, what's his name? Ralph Edwards. Ralph Edwards, that's his name. And then David Frost. David Frost took over. This Is Your Life. Anyway, so this is not your life, Noam. Now we're going back to my difficult, if not impossible, hypothetic. Jay Shattuck, your former colleague in Charleston, here with me live in the City of Love. That's what they call it, right? The Love City?
The Holy City.
The Holy City. The Holy City. Okay, Jay, what do you think the response in Charleston would have been were the situation different and there were nine dead, innocent, wonderful white people and one black punk arrested?
I mean, there definitely was race to play in the act itself. I don't believe that there's that much race to play in the reaction to it. Regardless of what the races were at the time, what happened on Wednesday night, it was nine of our citizens, nine of our neighbors that were killed by a horrible person. And to me personally, and of course I can't speak for the entire community, I certainly can't speak for the black community, but for me personally, that's what matters most. Our entire community was hit by this horrible act, not just the black community.
Noam, can you answer?
I disagree with Jay, actually. I think there would be the outrage would be even more intense than it is today.
Me too.
You would be taking phone call after phone call right here on WABC.
Oh, I think we'd have to have police protection for all black people down here. I don't think that there's any question that the reaction would have been far. It would have played into the whole narrative of black-on-black violence, the riots in Baltimore. It would have been a scene that but let me hasten to add. I think that what Jay said is aspirational. Yeah. I hope that that is how we react so these racist monsters, whatever their color, don't provoke what they hope to provoke with their obscene
Hey, give Jay a big wet kiss for me, like right
Ooh,
now. Big
doggy.
Wet kiss. That's how much I miss him.
All right, Jay Shattuck, thank you. I want to thank again the station. Did a wonderful job. Happy Father's Day, everybody. I'm sorry that this is a sad story leading into the weekend.